It's great to be here. I put up this slide, I think, to make myself more comfortable. That's a slide from our ranch, and I had many great mornings. And my father-in-law took that picture, and he called it "Mornings on Horseback." It ended up on a cover of a magazine, and it brings back a lot of warm memories for me, and I think it just makes me a little more comfortable, Connie. If you don't know much about me, I got 3 degrees at South Dakota State University, and I know that this room is full of animal breeders and geneticists and purebred producers, and so right away you realize that I'm line bred, academically speaking. And the other thing about me is that I have a very broad background. That's a nice way to say it. We're going to talk about animal science, farm management, a little bit of economics. I ranched for 20 years, so I have a very broad background, but not very deep. And the new age way of describing that would be eclectic, I think. But back on the reservation, the Rosebud Reservation, where I spent most of my life, that would be called being a mongrel. And so Dave Nichols, our designated troublemaker this morning, has now written down Barry is a line-bred mongrel suffering from inbreeding depression. But I like to look upon it a little differently. I think of myself as a hybrid composite with a stack pedigree that's highly predictable. So we'll get after this. I have some real goals today, and I'm going to list those here in a second. But one of the great things about being at a land-grant university is that you get to interact with people from different, not only disciplines, but different colleges. And through an interaction with people in the College of Engineering, they use a technique, and you can see it every time you see a surveyor out with stakes and a sighting down through a scope. It's called triangulation. And rather than thinking outside of the box, what I'd like you to think about this morning is that I'm trying to triangulate. I'm trying to take a different perspective on a common problem and one that's been discussed at many conferences, and there's many, many papers about profitability. But my background does give me a different perspective, and some of the things I'm going to bring out today are probably in conflict with other things that have been written in the past. I don't apologize for that, but it isn't thinking outside of the box as much as it is looking at this problem from a different point of view, just like engineers do in triangulation. My goals for today are to discuss measuring profit to reflect efficiency, to explain profit and financial efficiency as a set of relationships. And I should say I'm not going to talk about economic efficiency, and I'll get into those definitions in a minute. This is financial efficiency. But those are very distinct differences that you need to be aware of, and I'll try to help you with that if you're not. I'd like to share just a few research results, discuss the importance of using the correct valuation of assets in the determination of profitability, to discuss the importance of using the correct denominator in efficiency and in financial efficiency, and for just a minute talk about profit, risk versus opportunity. But you really... What I'd like to start out with, though, is an overview of a great graph that Dr. Purcell's group from back east has put together, and it's on the web at his website, and he's just doing super, super work. That is the retail adjusted price for beef. Back in 30 years ago, that was $3.15 a pound. Today, it's $1.80. This is an extremely mature industry. This is not a growth industry. This is not the cell phone industry. They sold 20% more cell phones last year than they sold the year before, whoever they are, and I haven't bought one yet. So we're not them. We're selling beef for a fraction of what we sold beef as I began my adult life, and that needs, you always need to keep that in context as a business. And I'm not here to talk today about individual animal efficiencies. I'm not talking about individual economic efficiencies or financial efficiencies for animals. I'm not talking about industry efficiencies. I'm talking about the efficiency at the firm level, that is, the business level. That's your ranch or your farm or your client's ranch or farm. So it isn't that I'm not interested in individual animals. I am, but this is my topic. This is my passion, and that's what we're going to be talking about. The response for most cattlemen can be, I think, I tried to find a picture of a cat clawing a wall, hanging onto a wall upside down. But the next best thing for cattlemen is that I think for a lot of people, we've just shut our eyes, turned our face into the wind, and hope for the best. And that strategy has not really been very effective. Over half the cow-calf producers in the country have exited the business over the last 30 years, and they've done it because of unprofitability more than anything else. If they've exited because of retirement, they just haven't been replaced. It's not a healthy industry, and I'll show you some industry figures, but there's some really bright news in the data that Dr. Hamilton and Dr. Dwayne Griffith helped me with and Dr. Dick Pruitt, and I'll share some of that with you. There's two definitions of profit. Well, there's many different definitions of profit. I don't know where ag economists get their world, but they've got to define everything multiple ways. But there's two big definitions of profit. One of them is net income. And net income has, and there's the formula, it's in your proceedings. It's very simple, gross revenue minus expenses. And it's been used in papers and at conferences like this for many, many years as a reflection of efficiency. And even Dr. Tess last night talked about gross margin, which is really a reflection of net income, and talked about that as efficiency. The other definition of financial efficiency is return on assets. And there's return on equity, and we can get in, and we don't need to get into all that. The big one is return on assets. If you're evaluating a stock for your 401k or your retirement plan or whatever it is, you don't look at gross net income for that company. You look at the income as divided by the assets that it took to generate that net income. You look at return on assets. And you want a company to be able to generate lots of return, lots of net income, with as low a level of investment as you can. And so that's return on assets. In return on assets, you have to add in some inventory adjustments for accrual adjustments, and you have to add back interest and a few details that this group, through the adoption of the SPA guidelines, has agreed to that this is the procedure that should be used. So let's talk about measures of efficiency. Net income does not have a denominator. Net income is a measure of output. It's somewhat analogous to measuring weaning weight or yearling weight or milk production. It's just gross product. It may be affected somewhat by differences in efficiency because of that expense side of it. So if you had really inefficient cows, for example, maybe they take more feed, or, you know, there could be some factors affecting efficiency, but there's no denominator. It's not a measure of efficiency. It's not an output-input relationship. It's not a measure of financial efficiency, and I'm not the only one who said it. The finest agricultural economist that I'm aware of, the man that changed history, that wrote the book that should be next to your Morrison's Feeds and Feeding, is a man named Hetty at Iowa State. And about the time I was born, his first edition of this book came out. This is not my idea. This is not Spa's or McGrann's or Hamilton's or Darrell's. This is net income for 50 years has we've been told not to use it as a measure of efficiency, and we've chose to ignore that advice. ROA, on the other hand, has a denominator. I showed you the formula. It's in your proceedings. its assets. So it is an output-input relationship. It is a measure of managerial efficiency. You need to think about profit, then, in terms of return on assets, as a set of relationships. It's a set of relationships between investment that it took in land, cattle, equipment, buildings, fences, windmills, wells, whatever, a biological production system, cow-calf, stocker, yearly. I mean, we're going to focus on cow-calf. You can do this with stockers, too. The value that those animals have in the marketplace and the annual expenses that are incurred to pay for the electric bill and the utility bill and the feed bill, purchase feed bill and the fuel and those types of things. Most of the emphasis from in the last 10 or 15 years in talking about how to make ranchers more profitable has been on driving down annual costs. But there's always a trade-off. And I'm going to show you some relationships. And if my experience and the data that Dr. Hamilton and Pruitt and Duane Griffith helped me with, if we've changed one thing, it's this. We've expanded the view that profit's a set of relationships and you can be actually a high-cost producer and be highly profitable. Now, there's a tremendous amount of risk to go with that. But you can have low levels of production and be highly profitable. You can market quite poorly into the marketplace and be highly profitable. But there's risk and opportunity with each one of those. I'm just going to put up an example, and this is a really simplistic, but the three big ones to determine ROA are up there. Gross income, let's say the gross income is $425 per cow. That'd be per beginning year breeding female. Total expenses, $385. And let's say that on a cost basis it took, that's the actual cost and depreciated value of the assets that it took to generate those pounds that were sold was $2,300. And so the return on assets is 2%. Well, one of the strategies that's been promoted heavily and is a great strategy, it reduces risk, is to lower expenses. So can you lower it? But the danger is if you lower expenses very far, you could lower levels of production. You could drop levels of reproduction if you took away a lot of feed, for example. If you don't, I think the saddest exit of the business, of the cattle business that I know of, is a friend of mine who just would not. He made it through the 80s. He's doing great, but he absolutely drew a line in the sand that he would not vaccinate for BVD. Well, if you think about the cost of BVD, and we'll talk about on a unit basis, it's really not very expensive. And when he hit a 40% preg rate because of BVD, he exited the business, and that was risk and opportunity. So he saved a little bit of money, exposed himself to tremendous risk, became extremely unprofitable, and exited the business. So, with $250 cow costs, low cow costs, if you had a gross income per cow of $400, $1,500 per cow invested, you've got a 10% return on assets. That's really good. And every one of these figures you will see came out of the data set we've created. Another strategy or another situation, and a lot of people face this, is relatively high levels of investment. In fact, it'd be very difficult to enter the cattle business today for $3,000 per cow. But there's lots of people on a cost basis. The average is about $2,400 per cow, a little over $2,300 per cow at a cost basis. But let's say that someone's made a big investment into this business and they have $3,000 per cow invested. Does that mean that they can't be profitable? Absolutely not. If they go to the marketplace, sell cattle for the top of the market, keep their costs reasonable, $300, they can have a 10% return on assets. It's a set of relationships. What about if they had high annual costs? And there's lots of people, Daryl, and Daryl's one of the leaders, and we're just kind of following up on the work that Iowa State started. But there's a lot of people with high annual costs. Now, that exposes them to great risk, financial risk, but can you be profitable with high levels of annual expenses? Well, certainly you can if you can go to the marketplace, sell. This is at weaning. This is chaos value to weaning. If you can go to the marketplace, bring home $700, and that would be cull-cow income too, keep your investment lower than average, $2,000, you can generate 10% return on assets. You can make money in this business. So you can come up with as many different scenarios as I can and as many different return on assets. We've measured people with a negative 25% return on assets, and we've measured people with a positive 25% return on assets. We've measured extremely profitable producers and under a whole raft of scenarios. But the research results, I'll just share with you as my next goal, that we undertook, were directed at identifying the factors affecting profitability of the cow-calf enterprise. A little bit on materials and methods to tell you what we did. This was not a controlled experiment like Dr. Jenkins and Dr. Fox do. This was field data collected with voluntary participation. We don't know that it's random, and we don't know the motivation of those that participated, but it's a great data set. We followed strictly, and if you know my friend Eddie, you know that I followed strict SPA guidelines, don't you, Dan? And that's an important step because this organization and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association have adopted the SPA guidelines as the appropriate way to measure profitability and performance in the cow-calf enterprise. And they have a stocker feeder SPA too. We started out with 239. We kind of whittled it down. We ended up with 148 herds in our final data set where we had all the performance data that they had plus all the financial data. So we had depreciation schedules and financial statements and income statements and put it all together and came up with a very detailed analysis. And one of the interesting things is that the more you know, the more you want to know, and the more we know about this data set, the more questions we have, and it's hard to go back. But in terms of how we analyzed that data, we characterized these 148 herds with SPA measurements like weaning percent, calving distribution, pregnancy percent, weaning weight, pounds weaned per cow exposed, and then lots of financial measurements. And we did not do an economic analysis. And I'll explain those differences here in a second. We did mean, standard deviations, minimums, and maximums. We divided the data set into three groups, and we divided it a little bit differently than you'll see in the literature. We let the data divide itself. We used one standard deviation above the mean and up as our high profit group. We defined low profit as one standard deviation below the mean and down as low profit, and everything in between was medium profit. And the reason we did this is because in business analysis, when someone analyzes businesses outside of agriculture, they use a technique called frontier analysis. And they want to see what the extremely profitable people or extremely outstanding individuals or individual businesses do. And they actually go out two standard deviations. Now, we wouldn't have very many people in that top group if we had gone out two standard deviations. It wouldn't be very real because you would say, well, that's, you know, an aberration. But we found 16% of our people are in this were highly profitable, and I'll show you why here in a second. So we compared those means for those three groups just with simple mean comparisons, and we did a multiple regression to determine factors affecting profitability, and I'm not going to go into it all. But before I show you the results, you have to know that on average, the businesses that we drove by on the way into Omaha yesterday, as all of us drove in here, the average return on assets for a business is 10%. That is, for every dollar they've invested at a cost basis They get 10 cents back every year. The cow-calf enterprise, whether it's McGran's work in Texas, the early work that was done in 92, or the great data set that Minnesota has from the FinPAC, measures profitability of the cow-calf enterprise at 2 to 3%. And if you went to your lender, if you're a cattleman, went to your lender, put out your financial statements, and let them do that ratio analysis for you, or on you, however you want to look at it, or to you, if your return on assets was 2 to 3%, you would be classified in the danger category. That is not a healthy return on assets. And I won't, but I could, explain why I think that this is the big driver of why people have exited the business more than anything else. So there's some data. And I guess I'm doing what Dr. Dickerson did. I got some colors. The different colors represent statistical differences. So in the top line, pounds weaned per cow exposed, those three groups, 413, 455, and 455. And pounds weaned per cow exposed is the cumulative performance. I could have given you all the data, but really you cut it all through. And we could not explain in this data set high profit by high levels of production. They had average production. And I want you to think about what group do you want to focus in? Well, it's really interesting to look at the low profit group and chuckle maybe, but it's most instructive for us to compare medium to high, because those are the survivors, and those are the people who have a chance to survive and to change behavior and move. So anyway, I thought, my biases when I started this project was that high profit would actually be associated with lower levels of production, and I was wrong. And Eddie had his biases, and I'm sure Dr. Pruitt's kind of the steady hand in all this, and kept saying, let the data say what it will. And the data said that levels of production don't explain profitability. High levels of production don't explain it. Low levels of production don't explain it. But then you start getting into some the financial stuff. And again, I've summarized this into some big categories. I don't give you enough detail for you to calculate that all out, which I probably should have, but it just gets too much. They went to high profit people, went to the marketplace, interacted with it, and received more value for their calves. And this has nothing to do with retained ownership or post-weaning, anything. This is value at weaning. They interacted with the marketplace and cull cows, and they got more for their cull cows. Now, whether that's reputation or uniformity or color, we don't know. Those are the kind of questions I wish we could go back and ask. But the point is that they had significantly higher levels of income. They also had, just as Dr. Strobeen and Dr. Boggs and other leaders in the IRM industry have preached for years, they had low costs. And think about it. They produced the exact same number of pounds per cow exposed with $116, is that the math, less annual expenses. Less purchase feed, less hired labor, less repairs, less grease, less whatever it is. Fewer utilities. And that's really amazing. That's managerial efficiency. So if you look at net income per cow, the differences start to, in my opinion, explode. $36 of net profit per cow versus $255. To put that, and some of this has been published in Beef and some other magazines, but to put this into perspective, if you take our data set and blow it up, and the average income of South Dakota, and I know we're 50th and everything, but the average income of South Dakota's is $35,000 per year. Well, that's, you know, I wish it was higher, especially for faculty members, but young faculty members like myself, but so I just said, how many cows would it take to generate $35,000 worth of income for that family? Because that's what net income is. Net income is the return to family labor and investment. You got to remember that. The net income is the return to family labor and investment. So it's the return to land. It's the return to the investment in the breeding stock. So they also have to service debt with net income. So I took the average debt figure of the high profit group. I amortized it over just 10 short years, and 202 cows, and I know you're not going to believe this, but it's true, in this data set, it only takes 202 cows to generate $35,000 worth of net income for family living and pay off all debt in 10 years. Do you need to get bigger to get better? Do you need to get bigger to get achieve efficiency? We found in the regression analysis, we found no correlation between profitability as defined by return on assets and size of operation. The flip side of this, if you take that $36 and you can do the math, you generate $35,000 worth of net income with $36 per cow and pay off debt. Well, 972 cows, Russ, will generate $35,000 worth of family living and not pay off any debt. So if net income is your only feedback in your operation, if it's the only feedback that you're getting, and for most people it is, your answer to not enough net income is to get bigger. Because those analyses of this type of data that use net income will show that size of operation affects net income. Well, certainly it does. It should. The bigger you are, you should have $40,000 worth of net income rather than 30, whatever that is. Now, that's not always true, but it's generally true. But if you take it and divide it by the assets that it took to generate it, then you get a different picture. The thing that we've probably added to the discussion is the next row, which is investment per cow, per beginning year female. On average, the median profit group had invested $2,300 per cow. The high profit people had invested $1,400 per cow. And I don't have time, and I wish, and I'll do it later. I got a couple days here. It's not land. It is not land. Land costs were about the same through both groups. Depreciation was significantly lower for high profit than low profit than medium profit. And depreciation is another indicator of investment. It's the annualized cost of a capital purchase like tractors, hay and equipment, buildings, windmills, fences, cross fences, watering systems, bulls, breeding stock, etc. And so the return on assets, which I think is the exciting news about this, for the high profit group, we found 16% of a data set of people just who knocked on our door and walked in and struggled through this with us, 16% had a return on assets of 18%. That before this last crash, that was .com type stuff. Whether that was real .com type stuff, we don't know, do we? But this is real. There's nobody trying to fool stockholders here. This is real stuff. And it's exciting. The sad thing is that a large number of people are not profitable. And believe you me, I know how difficult it is to take those steps. I filled out lots of balance sheets, lots of income statements. I've done lots of SPAs, and it is not easy to be high profit. But I told you it was a set of relationships. I gave you a few examples that could be about anything. Our data supports what Daryl's work over the last 10 or 15 years has shown. On a unit basis, per hundredweight or per cow, the specific recipe for profit is extremely low levels of investment, low annual costs. This is not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to interact with the marketplace and have the top calves every year. It's not easy to interact with the marketplace and buy low and sell high, is it? It's not easy in this world to cut out annual costs because you're tired and you're tired of fixing that swather for the 900th time and that bearing went out again and I'm going to go buy a new swather. But those decisions add into the problem. if they reduce repairs, I mean, it's all a relationship. If they reduce repairs, reduce labor, et cetera, then it's a great trade-off. If they've just added expenses, or just added investment and depreciation, it's not so good. So, in summary, in face of, and most of these herds were in Nebraska and North and South Dakota, a few in Montana and Wyoming. So there certainly probably are some regional effects. I've never ranched in Iowa. I've never ranched in Louisiana. And I can't imagine. I mean, I'll take a blizzard over Louisiana. But in the face of the same problem, no offense, but it's hot. It's hot now. It's hot in Omaha. I'm a dry heat guy. In the face of the same problems, the same extreme environments, and when I was ranching, in 1991, it reached 116 degrees on a July day. And in 1983, we were 40 below one January evening, and the wind chill in Valentine, Nebraska reached 101 below. But these people faced those same problems in those same environments, the same markets, and the same government policies, whether you think they're screwed up or you agree with them, whatever. They interacted in the same world as the rest of that data set, and they made substantially more money. And the neat thing about it is, other than at the marketplace, there's no competition. Now when John Young sells calves off the Rex Ranch, and I sell calves, and if we're at a sale barn, we're in competition, and John's going to beat me by 10 bucks a hundredweight, I'm sure, and I'll lose. But in terms of being a low-cost producer, there's nobody making me spend money. There's nobody making me invest too heavily. And when we get to these definitions, I don't care who bought the land next to you for some ungodly price to hunt pheasants. If you didn't buy it and you've got kind of a low basis in your land, that's what you need to evaluate. And I'll get to that in a minute. And this is it. I've gotten in trouble with this because I'm taking a different perspective. I've triangulated this problem a little bit differently. And if you think I'm anal retentive on some of this stuff, you should have met my dad. Or my grandpa. But I am, and Eddie Hamilton. You do it the right way or you do it over. That's the way I was growing up. And when I did it wrong, I did it over. And I learned the definitions, and Eddie made me learn the definitions, and I'm going to stick to them today. Two types of analyses in SPA. Two types of analyses in all evaluation of business. One's at cost, one's at market. At cost. Why would you analyze something at cost? Why would you leave land? In the Dakotas, lots of land comes in at $150 an acre, and in Iowa it must be $1,500 an acre. But anyway, why would you leave it at cost? Well, you do, because that's the decision you've made. So you leave something at cost because, according to those three textbooks, I don't have to cite scientific papers. This is the way farm management is taught. It's the cost analysis is the only appropriate tool for the analysis of managerial efficiency. And I'll show you a diagram in a second. Past decisions are evaluated in terms of their effect on present income. It's not a comparison of alternatives. It's not partial budgets. It's not what-ifs. It's looking backwards. It's a retrospective look. And this is how I've tried desperately to describe this difference and why it's important. Most ranches and cattle operations don't exist for 2 or 3 years. They exist for 20 or 30 years or 50 years. So, over time, land has been inherited, like my little cartoon shows. Somebody has set a stocking rate. Management decisions have been put in place, like I have across the top. A water development was cost-shared with NRCS, but there was still a 25% owner cost-share, for example. So that's depreciated out. There was land purchased in 85 when it was really cheap. You bought a tractor, you bought another tractor, you sold something. You bought a baler because the baler was worn out. You bought some bulls. You turned the bulls out. You created a calf crop. You went to the marketplace and you sold it. and you created, hopefully, created net income. And that's how cost analysis, and in Ford Motor Company, or and I've used this analogy, and then Enron and WorldCom come, and it's just like, can't trust them, but I'll try. Let's say Ford Motor Company's financial statements are meeting everybody's standards of ethics, and I hope they do. And they don't constantly revalue the property values underneath their factories. They bring it in at cost. They don't constantly revalue the steel that they purchased or they pre-purchased and say, well, geez, GM will pay me $5 more a ton on that steel. I'll just quit making cars and sell steel to GM because I can make $5 a ton on the steel. They don't do that. They bring, in the determination of the cost of a car, they bring everything in at cost. That is the appropriate way to analyze managerial efficiency. Why would you do a market analysis, also called an economic analysis? It's the only appropriate tool to enter or exit a business. It's the current situation looking forward, but it doesn't measure managerial efficiency. It doesn't measure past performance. It's about what you might happen in the future, what might happen. It's your best guess at what the market will be in the future, what things are worth today. It's a crystal ball, and it's a great tool. It's just not good at measuring managerial efficiency. What it measures is whether you should expand or not, whether you should get in or get out. And this is the way I've chosen to depict it. It's the value of all those assets, not at cost, but at market on July today. What are those assets worth? So it's the accumulated assets, the value of those assets at a certain point in time. And you can compare two different times on a market basis and see if on a market basis it was a wise decision to stay in the business. But it doesn't measure. It's high. What would be the factors that affect, Dan, what would be the factors that affect this? Inflation, deflation, 9-1-1, selling chicken to, or not selling chicken to Russia, all those things impact the market and have nothing to do with managerial efficiency. And so so it's not a good measure of whether you made good decisions over time in the cow-calf business. Now, I'm going to show you what I think is a really big problem in this industry. And I'm going to challenge this industry and try to do... I didn't know Dr. Dickerson, but I'm going to try to be reasonable, to have a test of reasonableness today on this topic, because this is really serious. I've shown you a beginning or a quick little income statement. I've just lumped a lot of things into other. But if the cows brought in 230 on a beginning year female basis, $430 a head, depreciation's 51. That's a real figure. Raised fees 75. That's a real figure. You don't on a cost analysis. You don't rent your pasture to yourself. You've owned it, so you don't have pasture rent. You don't have any deferred taxes and lots of other things, $271 for a total cost of $397. And those are really kind of realistic figures. It's about $400 to run a cow for most people. And you have a net income of $33. You do a market analysis. Well, the income's the same. Those calves, that progeny, all those things are worth that same amount. You don't use depreciation because you're doing it at market. Depreciation's irrelevant now. But you do increase in South Dakota, by golly, you'll increase the value of your raised feed because it's incredibly valuable right now in western Nebraska and western South Dakota. Still don't have pasture rent, but you do have deferred taxes. If you sold that property and sold those cows, that property would be subject to a basis step up, and that gain would be subject to capital gains tax at about 20%. If you sold those cows, they're actually ordinary income if you've raised them, and that can kick you into an ungodly tax bracket. And you face the deferred taxes, and you have to pay Uncle Sam's his taxes before you pay the bank back the loan. So that's real. And you can make, and I would challenge you when you go home or tonight at the bar to play with these figures as much as you want. You can flip this around. There are people with higher raised feed costs than the feed is worth. Now, the problem we get into in this business, and I've run into it interacting with people from Canada to Texas to Australia, is using mixed methodologies. And boy, does sending mixed methodologies screw up the feedback, the managerial feedback you need to make good decisions. Lots of people use mixed methodologies. Farmers and ranchers, farm management people, people at other universities, one of them at our university uses a mixed methodology, and it really confuses the issue. So I've worked with people who will add depreciation back in while they value feed costs at market. But they don't include deferred taxes. That's inappropriate. But it explodes things. Even without the deferred taxes, in my little example, it explodes expenses, and both of those look like a very unprofitable business when, in fact, this is a profitable business. They made $33 per cow. And maybe worse yet is when people use opportunity costs. So they mix it up, and they even add opportunity costs. They'll even add in the pasture rent. But net income is the return to land, and so they've just double-charged themselves. Opportunity costs, if you take the opportunity, you have to be willing to face the consequences. If you take the opportunity to sell that raised feed at market and rent that pasture out, what does that in effect do to your operation? You exit the business. And that's not the goal of managerial accounting or managerial efficiency, and so it's inappropriate. Now, I've tried to come up with lots of different analogies about why you don't use opportunity costs in these analyses, and I'll give you my best one. I hope it's my best one. My wife Jane and I are going to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary in a couple weeks. And so we've spent a lot of time reminiscing lately, and to make this really brief, we're sitting in the living room recently, and she was looking at me, and she has great big brown beautiful eyes, and you know, it was just wonderful. And she said, "You know, Barry, I could have married a doctor." You know, my flip response, you know, real intelligent, I've got 3 degrees now, was woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know. She didn't marry a doctor. She married me. You didn't sell the hay. You kept the hay. You didn't sell the land. So you don't evaluate a decision you don't make. Tell that to Jane. Well, moving right along. You heard a little bit last night about per what? Per cow, per hundredweight, a wean calf, and I've done it all, and I've got an extension appointment, and I'm, you know, like, you know, Niff and I, we're pretty broad, but we're really shallow, so I got everything in, not in metric, and I kept it in English, and so it's per cow, per acre, per hundredweight, a wean calf. And so I'm going to tell you some of the strengths and weaknesses of, because all three can be used, and they're all three used, and they can really be valuable, or they can really be misleading, and I hope you get some take-home messages. On the pro side, why you should use a per-cow basis. It's extremely good for communication. I chose today in my paper and in my talk to use per-cow, per-beginning year female, per-breeding, because it's a great way to communicate with people, because Connie knows her cows better than anybody on earth. It's used in property valuation. You buy a ranch. It's interesting that $3,000 or $4,000 that it would take to get started ranching, you know, stocking rates change, but that valuation stays the same. It's a great measure for reproductive performance. It's a great measure for calving distribution, death loss. It's really a great tool, but it's got some downsides. There's no output. If you take cow costs and divide them by $600 per weaned calf or $400 or 400-pound calves, you're going to come up with very different break-evens or total cost per weaned calf. So it's not very good for marketing. So if I have $400 per cow in costs and I have a $600 or 600 pound calf, that's a very different relationship than a 400 pound calves. And it masks stocking rate completely. And per cow what? In SPA, in the production side, it's per cow exposed. In the financial side, it's per beginning year female. And I know that anybody who's worked in this business has seen an awful lot of per cows preg checked. So you get into a lot of confusion on what a cow is. On a per acre basis, there's some really advantages. It's the fundamental unit of production, and some would argue that this is how we should evaluate it. It represents the largest investment. It shows regional differences. It expresses different management choices. We have a we in our data set, we have a producer in South Dakota harvesting 200 pounds of beef per acre, and we've got people harvesting 20 pounds of beef per acre, of weaned calf per acre. So those are really different management choices. Per what, though? Is it the total beef enterprise? Not always. Some people use the total beef enterprise. Some people split the hay enterprise out. I'm a firm believer you should leave the whole enterprise together because, South Dakota, you need hay. And there are large regional differences that make communications between regions difficult. And I guess my main concern is it could lead to overuse and abuse. If you're at 40 pounds per acre and you really think you need more money, you could crank that up to 50. But there could be a long-term price to be paid, and the price would be paid by the land. And you might not even see it. It might be your children. My favorite one is per hundredweight of weaned calf. It's the most inclusive measure. It includes reproduction, growth, nutrition, herd health. It's how cattle are marketed. So it's a great figure. You know, it costs me 75 cents to wean a calf, a pound of weaned calf. It costs me 85 cents. It costs me 65 cents. And if I know where the market is, I can use the market then much better if I know that figure. It's also an excellent tool in cost control. If you think about my friend with the BVD, his cost of that vaccination, Connie, per hundredweight of weaned calf would have been like decimals out. But some feed costs can be pretty large. The cons, though, there's one big one. Most people aren't used to using it. It's like this English metric thing, you know, where I'm always trying to figure out, you know, I'm always trying to convert. Well, it'd be a lot easier if we were living one way or the other. And most of us are living in a per-cow world. But from a marketing standpoint, I know Harlan Hughes is here, and Dr. Hughes has pounded on us for years that we need to take a step towards unit cost of production that is a per hundredweight of weaned calf basis, and he's absolutely right. In our analysis, per hundredweight of weaned calf was by far the most sensitive measure, much more sensitive than per cow or per acre. It showed more differences and more at a higher level of significance. I got to talk a little bit about risk versus opportunity. I'm not sure I'm over time. I don't want to look. I work so hard on this. You're going to listen to this. Haven't slept for a week. There's a lot of risks in this business, and I don't need to tell them to you. And we dodged a bullet last night, according to Greg, on the checkoff, and I apologize for most South Dakotans. Those are some risks. A huge risk in this business is not understanding output-input relationships. And they look like that. That's right out of Hetty's textbook. That's so, the curve might not always be sigmoid, but it's so fun when it is. And there are points of diminishing return, and it's just a great way to think about added investment, an added cost. Does an implant add? What's the input-output relationship for an implant, Dan? What's the input-output relationship for new feed bunks in your feedlot or whatever it is? Does it add profit or just add investment? Dr. Dick Pruitt did with his graduate student, Dr. Pat Momont, did some really classic work on body condition scoring. And I just wanted to give you a quick example of how you can use a production function and use it. And Dr. Pruitt didn't take this step, and so I'm taking it, with his blessing. But if you use body condition score as an indicator of energy status, Dr. Pruitt and Dr. Momont's work said that there was different, based upon body condition scoring, there was different probabilities of the next pregnancy. And so you can plot that out in a production function. And it's a great tool. And so above 6, at 7, there was really no advantage to have a cow and a cow condition score 7. And there was tremendous risk if you dropped it below 4. So does that make sense? I mean, this is a great tool, and I would encourage lots of researchers and people bringing technology to the market to use this tool and help producers with this, with the evaluation. But there's also opportunity in this business, and of course we convert forage to protein. We have consumer preference, and that's great. And I really was encouraged by what Dan said about the New Yorker magazine. Consumer demand is going up, hopefully, and maybe that big dive will turn around. But there's great opportunity for the application of technology. But in a production function, right out of Heady, right out of any econ book, they describe rational and irrational behavior. And I circled on a production function where economists describe rational business behavior, and outside of that circle, they describe it as irrational. That's the word they use. So in terms of Dr. Pruitt's work, it's irrational to have frames or body condition score 7 cows. And it's irrational to have body condition 4 cows because of risk of reproductive failure. Does that make sense? I mean, I think these are great. This is a great tool. So, summary. I had 6 goals. In summary, use ROA. It is the measure of managerial efficiency. Take the step. Everybody in ranching has, or their accountant has, and knows what their cost basis is on everything they have, because they're going to die. And the IRS is going to be after it, unless we get rid of the death tax, maybe. I wanted to explain profit and financial efficiency as a set of relationships. I do want to leave you with the idea that there are many opportunities for combinations of those, but our research showed that high profit was related to low expenses, low investment, average production with an emphasis on high levels of reproduction, and excellent marketing. I want to stress that when EPDs are calculated, there is a procedure that is used, and for those of you in the room that are scientists that do that, you use a procedure, and it's accepted by the by this industry and by you as scientists the same way in nutrition. If you're going to report dry matter, everybody calculates dry matter the same way. And it would be a great step for this industry. This group has already taken that step in terms of adoption of a resolution, but we all need to take this mental step that if we are going to measure managerial efficiency, we do it at cost and not market. I wanted to discuss the importance of using the correct denominator, and by far the most powerful denominator that we can use in terms of managing is per hundredweight of weaned calf, per cow exposed. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about production functions. And a couple of things, and then I'll quit. We can measure financial efficiency, and we must. The risks are too great. There's many, many cattlemen with $1 million invested, $2 million invested, and they don't know what their profit levels are. We must use appropriate methodologies just for standardization and communication. Technology must be measured in terms of output-input relationships, and hopefully our language will turn to those types of things. The last one there, managerial accounting, is a new step, and I would encourage this group to include in upcoming programs discussions of managerial accounting. The beef industry is joined with the soybean industry, the corn industry, the swine industry, and where's Rich Benson? Because that's only four and there's five. Pardon? Cotton. In developing a standardized chart of accounts and a standardized way of analysis, and the beef industry, with the leadership of Renee Lloyd, is on board, but we need your support. And it'd be a great topic. So with that, I'm done.